At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
So there's a few ways to humidify a space that I've worked on through the years. Now, we have infrared humidifiers. I don't know if you've ever seen these in Liebert's, where basically it's a pan of water and there are lights that shine down and it heats the top of the water. It evaporates into the airstream. We have the evaporative style humidifiers that you see in residential, where we flow air through a pad and we evaporate water. It moves into the airstream. But listen, the pinnacle or the peak of all that is steam, okay? Because steam is boiled off, it turns into a vapor right away. As it enters the airstream, it's already a vapor. We're not trying to evaporate water into the airstream because it's already done so at the humidifier itself. So what we're going to talk about on this podcast is sort of educational stuff around steam. What kind of water is good for steam? What do we do if our water doesn't have enough conductivity? How do we install a steam humidifier? And we have April Ayer's trainer, Chris Howells, on the podcast, and we're going to talk to Chris about steam in general, types of water, types of applications, how to check your water to see what the conductivity is, all that kind of stuff wrapped up in this one show. So this is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and on top of their MoveAir brand that is exclusive to them with central heat pumps and ductless heat pumps, they also carry the Fujitsu lineup as well. So Fujitsu to me is sort of like an up-and-coming brand. I know it's been around for a long time, but I have just noticed that they're putting more effort behind their training and their brand recognition and stuff like that. So if you want to check out the Fujitsu stuff, go to Master and check them out. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas. And Cintas, as we've been talking about for a year now, a year and a half, Cintas is one of our good sponsors here on the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. And they provide clothing, right? To stay warm, to stay dry, to stay cool, depending on where you work and what you're doing, right? So if you guys are in the market to suit your team with some uniforms and have a variety to look at, check out cintas.com/HVAC Know-It-All.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
Or I guess we're live, man. I didn't even show the countdown here, so... Chris, man, how you been?
I've been well. How about you, Gary?
Good, good. So there was a lot of good feedback from the video that basically you and I did when you were here in Toronto for that, I guess it would be small distributor sort of get-together seminar type things. So there was a lot of good feedback. It generated a lot of questions. And I'm currently installing an April Ayer steam humidifier, an 800 in my own home. Now it's a slow process for me because I'm so busy, like at work with the kids, you know, and then I get like half an hour here, half an hour there to get this thing in. So, I mean, it's a slow process and I'm reading the manual, making sure I'm doing everything correctly. But as I'm posting about it and as I'm sharing what I'm doing and the things that I'm learning, I think there still might be a lot of misconceptions on steam humidifiers, right? And I've written down a bunch of notes as I've read to you before we hit record here. Just let me get your take on steam humidification in general and how it's, to me, it's a dominant way of humidifying a home. And I may have told you, but I used to use, back when I bought my first house, I used to boil the kettle right beside the return air vent.
Yeah.
And within 10 minutes, it felt way better in the house. I swear to God, it was like my skin was itchy and dry and stuff.
And as the humidity started to move around the home, you could actually feel it in your skin, like the itching starting to kind of diminish just from that kettle boiling beside the return. So let me get your take on steam humidification, and then we'll go on with some of the questions I've got.
Yeah, no, funny story really quickly is, as a technician for many years myself, there's always one job that I talk about in particular when we're talking about humidification. And there's two processes in creating humidity in a home. You can either evaporate water or you can boil it and create steam. But the one job that I always have a very fond memory of is I was working on a low boy. It was a 20th century furnace. And I opened up the back door to get into where the blower compartment was. And I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but they had the belt drive motor. It sat on the ground. And then there was a filter rack that sat kind of at an angle above it. Well, okay. There was no filter in there, but there's a big old 5-gallon Home Depot bucket just sitting in there. And it was full of water. So, you know, I'm going, I know what this is, but I'm going to talk to the homeowner really quickly here and just get his take on it. And that was his humidifier. So, you know, we go back a long time about boiling water or trying to evaporate water. It's humidification, and a little bit goes a long way with some of those approaches to evaporating and creating humidification. But to answer your question specifically on steam, and really as the industry continues to trend in the way it's trending with heat pumps specifically, steam is going to be the most effective way to humidify a home because of lower plenum temperatures. And I know we don't want to talk about evaporative too much here, Gary, but really at the end of the day, you need a good heat source for a very effective evaporation process to take place. And the lower our plenum temperatures decrease, the longer it's going to take it to evaporate that water. Now, steam, we're doing all the work within that canister. And when we're taking that work and then we're just simply introducing it to the airflow, we just need that mechanism of absorption to take that air and distribute it through the home.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe we should start with the water type, because we can't humidify without water, right? So some questions I have around the water, and I there could be some misconceptions in here just from the feedback that I'm getting from the online audience. Let's talk about the type of water that is probably the best type of water to use in a steam humidifier. And then we can talk about, because not everybody's water is the same, right? And I took a TDS meter and I measured the water. And I always giggle when I read or say this, but how the conductivity is measured in microsiemens. I don't know why. I want to giggle every time I say that. And when I made the post, I'm like, hey guys, get your jokes out of the way because it's called microsiemens. And I think mine was, I gotta say, in between just around the 400 range. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I read in your manual, and then I went to, what canister, what voltage, and all that stuff. And that's what's great about your manuals. You can take a water sample and then figure out what canister and what voltage you want to use to get the most steam, the best steam, the best production out of the steam humidifier. Right. So let's talk about water. Let's start with your opinion on the water that we should be using, or what we can do to the water to make it to better, or what we shouldn't do to the water.
Yeah. Well, you hit it, Gary, because we need the water to boil. It's what's in that water from a conductive standpoint that's going to make that canister either thrive and very effectively boil that water, because there is a lot of mineral content in there. Or if you have more of that naturally soft water where there isn't a lot of minerals that can create that conductivity there, that's why we have two specific different canisters. And we talked a little bit about that on that quick post that you did, where we were talking about our Model 80 and our Model 80LC, which stands for low conductivity. But when we think about water in general, what's in the water? And we've got elements of magnesium, calcium, copper, iron, zinc. There's a lot of elements that comprise in our water. And obviously the metallic elements are going to be the most conductive. And, you know, there's always a lot of questions about, well, should we filter the water going into a steam humidifier? And our stance from April Air is, if you filter the water, are you removing the conductivity of the minerals that are in there? And now you're going to offset the production. So it's going to take longer for that water to start to boil than just utilizing the minerals or the hardness of that water to effectively boil. And there's a give and take, a pro and con, however you want to look at it, because if I've got harder water and, you know, you measure the micro Siemens, and that's correct, that that is that electrical conductivity of the water. And that's why that's a great measurement to have at the fingertips. Most of us, though, even the basic TDS meter, that total dissolved solids meter, is oftentimes just measuring in parts per million. And then we got to use a conversion factor of 17.1 to get it to our grains of hardness. Well, the grains of hardness is a good number because it reflects our installation manual, because it speaks to the mineral content itself. So if we've got that hard water versus that soft water, if we've got naturally soft water or softened water, there's all these different misconceptions about, well, what should I do in what canister? And you said the right thing, and I want to make sure that everybody hears that. It is referencing the water type based on the application that you are installing that humidifier to. You know, our unit is 120 volt, 208 or 240 volt single phase. You're driving the capacity and the potential based on that power first. Then we've got to consider what that water quality is to drive to effective steam production.
Yeah. Okay. So you brought up filters. Now, there's all kinds of different filters on the market. There's like filters that will just filter everything out. Now, I was thinking of using a coarse sediment filter just for large particulate. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Or do you think that would affect the operation of the humidifier?
Well, and you have to consider what are those coarse particles or minerals that you're taking out. Because if it is one of those metallic type that is going to limit your conductivity, then you're actually going to hurt the overall production. It's going to take longer for that canister to boil. So if you know specifically, if they can tell you what it will remove, that will be your saving grace of using an inline filter versus just going with the unfiltered approach to the install and getting the result of effective. If you've got harder water, I mean, you said you were in the 400 to 500 range, I think, in micro Siemens.
Something around there, yeah.
Yeah, so you're in that slightly hard range of water conductivity, and I'm assuming 240 volts as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be wiring it to. Yeah,
you're going to be in a standard 80 canister in that category based on what you had said. If, for instance, you were to put that inline filter in, and let's just say you lowered the conductivity of that water, you potentially would then have to go to an 80 LC, which at the end of the day isn't a terrible thing. But at the same time, are you adding another layer of cost and installation to your system where it might just be just fine with a standard canister that's in that unit?
And let me give you some background on why I was thinking of using a coarse sediment filter, is because in commercial, the world of commercial that I lived in for many, many years, there was a lot of steam humidification that was going on, but these weren't April Airs. These were other brands. And a lot of them had coarse sediment filters in the water line going into it. And the reason the manufacturers wanted them is because they had inlet screens on their fill valves, and it would help the inlet screen from being plugged if there was coarse sediment in the water. Sure. And it was never a problem to create the steam and generate the steam. Like, I've never personally had to rip open a salt packet and throw it into a humidifier to get the minerals in there. Yeah. So that's why I was considering it, just so I could potentially save. Does the April Air, does your version have an inlet screen, like a screen on the inlet valve?
On our fill valve, solenoid valve, there is a inline strainer. Okay. So yeah, absolutely. Okay.
All right. So it's something that I could experiment with for sure to see if it
and
would.
And please provide us the feedback on what your reaction to it is.
Yeah, I will. And what I was going to do is take the TDS meter and test it again, right? Before and after the filter. And I will definitely give you that feedback, but it's just something I wanted to experiment with, just to see what the difference would be. And if there's any sort of issues with it running or not. Right. So, and this is one of the things, this is one of the things I love about the trade and doing it in my own home is I can experiment with things, go to 115 volts if I wanted to, try the LC canister, try the filter. And then I am super knowledgeable when it comes to installing and servicing somebody else's piece of equipment, right? Outside of the home. Yeah. Because the last thing I want to do is experiment at somebody else's house with their equipment, right?
Yeah.
So I'd rather do it in my own house. And okay, so we got some water chat going on here, and somebody said, and this I think this might be a misconception. RO water, that's not something that we want to use in the humidifier, right? Because somebody's like, say, use the RO water because it'll prevent your scale in your humidifier, but if you're weary about a sediment filter with a coarse filter in it, RO water could be a disastrous situation, right?
So we're in this time and age right now where contractors are having a real hard time finding skilled people, even warm bodies to fill positions that they can train. That's why I've been kind of successful utilizing commercial companies and subbing out, because they don't even have enough guys. So they rely on subs to fulfill their work. So if you're having this kind of trouble finding the right candidates to work in your company and you haven't checked out WiseHire, just check them out, give them a chance. You can come up with an ad real, real quick. And on the back end, they have experts that will optimize the ad to find the right people you're looking for. So check out wisehire.com. I guess you could say the cat is out of the bag on surge protection and voltage monitoring, because more and more talk around it. And we all know that what it can do is protect our sensitive equipment that has all the circuitry in it from being damaged from over under voltage or surges. So Rector Seal's got an all-in-one kit. It's called the RSH50 VRM DC kit. Surge protection, voltage monitoring, and also an on-off switch inside, which also pairs as a breaker, protecting up to 60 amps. So look for that kit if you want to introduce voltage monitoring and surge protection to your customers.
You're exactly right. When we get to the RO, reverse osmosis, pure water systems, deionized, things of those buzzwords, and those types of systems in homes, we are doing just that. We are removing that conductivity of the water. And for all practical purposes, for the home might be the right solution. But when we're talking about humidification and specifically boiling the water for steam and humidification through the home, we want that mineral content. So your best bet would be to go upstream from those types of system and test that water before it comes in and, you know, relate it back to the installation manual, as you stated, and know what your water quality is so you can drive to the right canister type to make sure that you're going to get effective steam production. So the way we stand on it, just to reiterate, is if you have those types of systems, we would recommend going upstream from that type of system for the humidification purposes.
Gotcha. Okay. So one more question about water and we can move on to some other stuff.
Sure.
There was somebody, one of the comments that I got, and I laughed, but I mean, you can give me your take on it, but I think it was highly filtered or RO water, and they were always getting humidity alarms that they couldn't produce humidity. So the guy said that he would throw rust, like physical solid rust, into the canister.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never like, I don't know. That just seems odd to me. Right. Like I would rather open up a couple packs of salt and throw it in there. What do you think about throwing physical solid metal like rust into a humidifier?
I don't know how I feel about it, but what you're doing and just speaking to that in putting a metallic element into the water is you're just creating that conductivity. You're just creating that element of now that water to start interacting, because Nick Haig is a manager for Canada for April Air. And he comes
who
from,
I've met. Yep.
Yeah. He comes from the water background. I learned so much from him just in my recent travels up north with you all there. And I love what he said during one of our trainings is, you know, if you have pure water RO and you dunk your hands into that water, you're not going to get shocked because there's no conductivity. There's no electrical current passing through. But he said, if you were to take your hands and you, now you start to move them and create a little bit of that oil and dry skin and things coming off into that water, you have now created that current path for that water to now be, you know, electrified. And now you would get a shock based on that. And, you know, whether you're putting in rust, salt, or any other kind of metallic element, you're just creating the pathway for that electrical current to take place.
Interesting. So basically, I don't know why I got these dark thoughts in my head. I'm thinking of somebody going into somebody's bathroom and trying to murder them with a toaster, throwing it in their bathtub. But if they've got RO water in their bathtub, right, they're not going to get electrocuted. And that guy's going to be standing there going, uh-oh. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's a very interesting topic.
It is.
Yeah, it is for sure. And it makes a lot of sense because without the minerals in the water, there's no conductivity.
Right.
Right. Okay. So what would you suggest if you're having issues with a humidifier? Let's say somebody piped it into RO water by accident and they got to get humidity in this room. What would you suggest throwing into that humidifier cylinder? Would you suggest salt or any other mineral to throw in there?
Well, first and foremost, it's important to test the water. And with these meters, you know, you mentioned your TDS meter. It's probably very similar to this one. These are very low cost to the field when we're talking about tools and instruments. It's super easy. You fill up the water, you dunk this in there. I let it set till it levels off. It's probably 1 to 2 minutes. It doesn't take a long time. But then I know exactly what my water quality is, and I can make the call to say, okay, do I need to have the standard 80 canister, or do I need to go to the 80 LC? Because the reason why the LC canister was manufactured was for specific instances where you were mentioning, we had to put salt into the water. Well, that LC canister, which it stands for low conductivity, is a couple different things versus, this is a standard 80 canister. If I had another 80 LC next to it, by physically looking at it, you wouldn't tell the difference. But mm-hmm. what we did do is on the electrode elements, these are the two element points here, and within that canister, you would have 35% more surface area of the electrodes within the water. So it's creating a more path of that electrical current between those two electrodes and getting those minerals, even though they're lack thereof with low conductivity, you're still getting them excited through that. Those elements are also slightly closer than the standard canister, which gives that pathway even more validity behind it to create that excitement.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, so let's move on to some of the install and best practices for the install. Now, if we're going to put the dispersion tube in a duct, right, we can put it in supply or we can put it in return. And I've talked to some people that have experimented with return, and they said it works great. Some people are like, oh, I'd never do that because I'm going to get my board wet and stuff in my air handler or my furnace. But if you have the right absorption distance, right, that's not even a factor of getting any water on your board and causing it to corrode and fail, right?
Yeah, I'm really surprised, Gary, by when we have meetings and trainings and we're talking about the installation of a steam dispersion tube, and I mentioned return duct, it's almost like I said the worst word in the world because everybody freaks out. To your point, they think about steam, they think about water, they think about their filter getting wet, a variable speed motor, that module is going to get wet, a control board is going to get wet. And as long as you're following that absorption distance, and what I love most about our absorption distances that we publish in our installation manual is we use a lower plenum temperature considering that there is not a heat call. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about controls here in a few minutes, but when we're prioritizing humidification with an automatic type control, we're going to have a call for humidity without a heat call, which means now we have lower plenum temperatures, which means we need a greater distance of absorption into that air stream. And when you have that, that's what you need to reference because there's four columns in the installation manual, and it talks about plenum temperatures, humidities. I always go to what the return temperature would be. And then I look at that distance, and then you're going to see your feet per minute, your velocity of airflow, and then your voltage. And then you take that in consideration. Now, on average, it's like 36 inches. It's 3 feet of clearance from that dispersion tube to any touch point. And if you're in the return, downstream. If you're in the supply, upstream. So when we get calls a lot of times and there's fear of water in the duct system, or they are experiencing that, 9 out of 10 times it's because that absorption distance wasn't calculated and considered.
Okay. Yeah. I read that in your manual, and I think I set mine up for, I think my return duct is about, I remember measuring this years ago when I was putting in an IAQ monitor, I think it's around 700 feet per minute. Mm-hmm. And I think in the manual, it was asking for about 12 inches right. of absorption distance. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what it was, but mine's like, I've gone way beyond that. It's like 3 feet of absorption distance. So I'm going to be okay because I've already got my dispersion tube in place. So what was I going to ask there? Yeah. Okay. So if we want to protect our system from any steam being sort of thrown into the duct, if the humidity is too high already, or if we have no airflow, we can add in certain things like air proofing switches, right? Or pressure switches that allow the system to know, hey, there's airflow here. Or we can add in some high humidity sensors, right? You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, and it's something that as a proof safe of, okay, we know we have a blower activation, and at that case, we can go ahead and effectively humidify and get that steam absorbed with no fear. However, if we're utilizing, I'll speak to the April air control specifically and the way our automatic okay. control is set up. The only time that humidifier should come on is whether you have a heat call or we're activating the blower through the circuitry of that control. And I'm not saying that doesn't mean you don't need those, because that is that safe that you can add. It's like adding a water sensing switch to, you know, your air conditioning condensate line, or, you know, to a dehumidification system, something of that sort. So any kind of pressure switch or air proofing switch, you can put right in series, low voltage series within the control of the steam humidifier. And then you've got that safety there that's built in.
Perfect. Okay. So let's talk about the control a little bit more. Now, there's an option to run an outdoor air sensor, correct?
There is. Okay. And it's highly recommended, because on the auto control, and I have one right here, this auto control, what it does is it takes that outdoor temperature, and it's a resistance value. So it's a standard 10K thermistor at 77 degree Fahrenheit. So it's pretty standard to our industry. The way the control looks at what it's measuring outside is taking that resistance and adjusting the indoor relative humidity by 0.5% for every degree change that happens outside. So that way, when we get lower outdoor temperatures, we're going to lower the indoor relative humidity to align with that to prevent any kind of condensation buildup or quote unquote over humidifying a home in those cases.
Yeah. And no, it's a good idea, because I remember I've just got an evaporative style humidifier right now that I'm going to be taking out. But I remember when I first put it in, I had it cranked up, and then we had this cold snap and it got super cold, and I didn't, obviously you're not always thinking, and I didn't go down and adjust the setting. Right.
Right.
And the windows were all like sweating.
Yeah.
And it was such a bad cold snap that the wind was hitting the back of the house, and some of the electrical outlets actually had frost on them.
Sure.
Cause the house was so humid, and I guess the air was infiltrating through the walls and through the insulation, even the, I guess the vapor barrier, and it was moving through the electrical outlets.
Right.
And there was actually frozen water on the electrical outlets. That's how cold it was. And that's how hard the wind was blowing to the back of the home.
Yeah. And those are always interesting to think about and look into from the building science perspective of your heat gain, heat yeah. loss, infiltration.
Yeah. Oh
infiltration.
Yeah.
That's a whole different subject for another day.
It definitely is, but you make a good point with the control using the outdoor sensor and lowering your percent RH as your temperature outside goes down, so you don't have these issues where you have condensation on your windows and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and the one thing you do need to consider though, Gary, is I'm not a window expert by any means, but if you've got a terrible style window, it's an old window, it might be single pane wood panel or maybe even a double pane, that process of the heat differential can create condensation. And a lot of times the humidifier will get the finger pointed at it saying, well, it's because I have a humidifier in there. But there's also the consideration that we have to understand that if you have a very cold temperature outside on a surface and then you put heat to it, we all understand dew point occurs. Consider that as well as not just the finger point at the humidifier. It's a good talking point, especially for our industry as our industry changes, that we're becoming more this indoor environmental slash whole home envelope expertise, you know, professional today. It's something to look at and consider and not just say, hey, we need to crank down the humidistat because it's set too high. There could be those properties of poor integrity of a window that's creating it as well.
Of course. And I think people start to, there's some people that fully understand that there's HVAC issues and there's building issues. Mm-hmm. What I think it's hard for techs to wrap their head around is like, okay, I installed this unit and this room's cold over here. The customer's complaining at me, but the unit might be sized right. There might be enough airflow, but there might be way too much infiltration on that home in the wintertime, and it's getting too cold and it can't heat up the room because the infiltration rate is just too large. And that's tough for explaining to customers. Well, I just put this new system in, Mr. and Mrs. Customer. Yeah, your son's room is cold, but I can't do anything about it. You're going to have to tear your wall down and re-insulate and re-vapor barrier. And right. And that's a tough conversation to have. So every time somebody calls me and says, oh, I need a new furnace, I got a couple of cold rooms in my house, I want to fix that, I'm like, well, listen, we can put in a new furnace, but it's probably not going to fix the two cold rooms in your house, right? That's a building issue. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to figure out what's wrong with that part of the house, correct that, and then your HVAC system will work the way it should, right? So just, I'm glad you threw that out there.
Yeah.
Couple more questions on install. So when we have that dispersion tube in the duct and we have our steam hose, we want to slope that back towards the humidifier so any condensation coming out of that dispersion tube can drain back into the cylinder, right?
We do. And that's an important piece to making sure that we're not getting that water coming out of the dispersion tube. If you were to look at April Air's dispersion tube, if you look at our tubelets are inset in that tube. Because we want to capture that steam at its highest temperature where we're capturing what is called dry steam. So it's above and beyond the boiling point or of that phase change to create that vaporization into dry steam. So when we do that, on the outside, you're going to get that condensation. Well, April Air doesn't require any kind of drain line from the dispersion tube because of the system and how we ask for it to be installed, to have that pitch coming back to quarter inch every 2 feet, I believe it was, in having that run back that allows that water, that condensation to run right back into the canister and be reprocessed as part of the evaporation or the boiling of, excuse me, in the generation of steam at that point.
Mm-hmm. But there is a part of the manual that speaks to when your dispersion tube is lower than the humidifier.
Right.
So we have to create a trap and drain it a different way.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because if you do have any downward slope, or even if you're not able to obtain that slope requirement, we do ask that you put this drain trap assembly into this installation, because what that'll allow that to do is it'll allow that condensation to go down that drain, force the steam out through the dispersion tube, and you're not going to get any kind of gurgling sounds or getting any kind of physical water spraying out of the dispersion. So those are common types of concerns or even problems that we've heard post installation. And a lot of times we have to go back and say, okay, now you need to install this drain trap because you either don't have the proper slope, it's not supported correctly, or you have that downward slope to the dispersion.
Gotcha. Okay. So next thing I want to tackle, we can take 5 minutes. I mean, shouldn't take too long, but maintenance. I mean, it's fairly simple to maintain these things. I mean, the bottle needs to be changed every so often, maybe annually, depending on how much usage there is, maybe less, maybe more, but change the bottle, maybe vacuum out the, I've had to do this on other brands in the commercial world, is just kind of vacuum out the bottom end where the drain valve, just where the water is draining from, just because sometimes you get a little bit of like sediment buildup in there and stuff like that. Checking your wiring to your electrodes, making sure that they're nice and tight and good. Like, is there anything else that we need to worry about when it comes to maintenance?
No, you pretty much hit it. But the one thing I always want to stress, and it's often missed, is there's this little baggie that comes in every canister that you get from April Air. This baggie includes this O-ring. That O-ring would sit in that reservoir that you mentioned having to clean out. It doesn't fit physically on the drain stub of the canister, but it goes in that reservoir. That is one of the most prone leak points, because that is experiencing that hot and that cold and that hot and that cold. So it can wear it out. It can fray at times. So every time that you replace a canister, please make sure you're changing that O-ring. You're cleaning that reservoir, like you mentioned. But most importantly, you said something very important, is those electrode wires. And you helped us with this on our last little segment when we were on site, is making sure that we check those electrodes to make sure that they are an O-type connection. Because you could see that on that electrode point, it's an O style. We had a previous electrode wire connection that was a D connection. And if you put that D connection onto an O connection, it'll work. But what happens is you have that gap, and that gap creates heat and resistance and can overheat at times. So really just making sure that the canister is replaced as often as it needs to be. And a lot of times the unit will tell you when it needs to be replaced, because I call it the brains of the operation. It's measuring the ampacity, and it's measuring the flush and the fill of this canister to utilize the full life of it.
Yeah.
But also just checking those wires and replacing them every 3 years is a safe approach to proper maintenance on a steam humidifier.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if there's anything else that we missed that you think is important, I mean, throw it in now and then we can wrap this up, Chris.
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of it. The one thing I did want to go back to on the control side, because oftentimes the control gets lost in the mix of actually the result of humidification, is if you're using an auto control like this, this is the model. This is actually the evaporative model. It's our model 60. What you'll get with our model 800 steam humidifier is the 62, which is near identical to this one. So I'll just show you this for point of reference. But on the back side, this is the RH sensor. This RH sensor needs to be placed in the return duct, and it needs to be upstream from the dispersion tube if you're in the return. You want about 12 inches minimum away from that dispersion tube. But also it's using the full functionality of the blower activation. There's a little switch on the bottom here that once you go through the wiring and you activate blower activation, what that does is that now prioritizes humidification for that home. But please don't just do it to do it. Make sure you're investing the time with your homeowners to talk about why this blower activation feature is so important to maintaining and sustaining humidity year round, or at least for the heating season. In the importance of that for the health, the comfort, and preservation of a home as well.
Okay, so just to break that function down, so basically if the fan is off, the system's not running, but it senses that the humidity level has dropped in the home, it will actually turn the fan on.
It will prioritize. I'm sorry. It will prioritize humidification anytime it sees a heat call. So on the underside.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, on the underside where your 24 volt comes in this terminal block, you're going to have your W terminal. That's just a simple input that the control says, okay, hey, I need to turn on the humidifier if we're below the set point based on the algorithm of outdoor temperature and indoor humidity.
Okay.
If we don't have a heat call in 60 minutes, What that blower activation also does is it allows that control to turn on the HVAC blower because we're breaking the G circuit through the blower, and it will sample the air for 3 minutes. After that 3 minutes has elapsed, it will look at that algorithm and say, we either need to continue to humidify because we've seen a decrease, or we will go back into standby mode until the next hour has elapsed or there is a heat call.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Sampling the air and then, yeah, because obviously if there's dead air, you can't really get a good indication of what the RH is in the home, right? So sampling the air for 3 minutes will give you a pretty good indication. So thanks for clearing that up. So, I mean, Chris, man, this has been great. And like I learned quite a bit here from yourself, and I've been digging deep into this, and I'm just hoping that we are transferring this information in ways that other people can learn from it too.
Hey, I appreciate it. And thank you for all you do for the industry.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.